So picture a commuter train, right? It's traveling at like 60 miles an hour, and it actually takes over a mile to come to a complete stop after the emergency brakes are fully engaged.
Yeah, full mile.
Which is wild. Think about that for a second. By the time a conductor sees a vehicle trapped on the tracks, the physics of the collision are, well, they're already locked in.
Oh, absolutely.
The outcome is basically predetermined before the brakes even begin to bite. So today, we're really looking at the exact moment that your everyday autopilot just shatters
Right.
and what actually happens in the immediate, incredibly high stakes aftermath of the inevitable impact.
It's a really sobering reality, honestly, because we rely on this massive, totally invisible web of infrastructure just to, get to work or grab a coffee. And when that infrastructure fails, it just strips away the illusion of safety entirely. And what follows isn't just a tragedy. I mean, it is a tragedy, but it's also the beginning of a microscopic, highly adversarial investigation.
Exactly. And that is exactly where we're going today in this deep dive. We're
Wow.
exploring the hidden mechanics and the complex legal realities of transportation accidents. Specifically, we're focusing on a really tragic recent incident at the Merritts Road crossing.
Yeah, that was awful.
A 21-year-old man from Farmingdale was actually struck and killed by a Long Island Railroad train. And I mean, emergency responders were on the scene incredibly fast.
They really were.
But the young man still succumbed to his injuries, and it's just a devastating loss. But studying the aftermath of incidents like this, this whole hidden world of liability, corporate defense strategies, and the really specialized legal firepower you need to navigate it.
Yeah, because when a catastrophe like the Merritts Road crossing incident occurs, the transition from a human tragedy to a systemic investigation, it happens in a matter of hours. Literally, the moment the tracks are cleared, a multi-layered analysis begins. And to really grasp how complex this is, we kind of have to look at the anatomy of the crossing itself.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because I think most people, myself included, assume a train crossing is just a simple mechanical switch.
Right, like a trigger.
Yeah, a train rolls over, a trigger on the tracks, the lights flash, the gate drops. Simple, right?
Right.
But looking at the actual engineering behind these systems, it is so much more intricate than that.
Vastly more intricate. I mean, investigators aren't just out there checking to see if a gate arm is snapped in half.
Right.
They are pulling data from something called a grade crossing predictor, or a GCP.
GCP.
Yeah, that's the specialized computer you sometimes see housed in those little silver bungalows next to the
Oh,
tracks.
yeah, little boxes.
Exactly. It uses electrical impedance, so it's sending a constant electrical signal through the steel rail.
Right.
And it uses that to calculate not just that a train is coming, but the exact speed of the approaching train.
Wait, really? So it's calculating the physics in real time?
Precisely. It is designed to provide a constant warning time. So whether a massive freight train is crawling at like 10 miles an hour or a commuter line is flying at 80, that algorithm is supposed to drop the gate at the exact right millisecond.
Right, to give drivers adequate warning without, causing unnecessary traffic jams.
Exactly. But if that algorithm fails, or if, say, a corroded wire alters the electrical impedance in the rail, the gate drops 2 seconds too late.
Oh,
And
wow.
right there, that is your hidden liability.
That reminds me so much of the Swiss cheese model of accident causation.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Right. Because when people see a collision on the news, they just see the final impact. But in reality, accidents are like slices of Swiss cheese stacked together.
Right.
The holes represent the failures, like a blind curve, a delayed signal, maybe a poorly painted line. Most days, the holes don't align.
Right, you get lucky.
Exactly. But when a tragedy happens, it means every single hole in that infrastructure aligned perfectly to trap someone. And the investigator's job is basically to prove those holes were left there negligently.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize it. Because the defense, which is usually a massive transportation authority or some giant railroad corporation,
Right.
they will immediately try to focus everyone's attention on the very last slice of cheese.
The victim.
Exactly, the victim's actions.
Right. Because we all know the cardinal rules of the road. I mean, never try to beat a train, never stop your car on the tracks, even in gridlock. Always look both ways. No texting.
Right, the basics.
The instinct is to assume that if someone got hit, they must have, you know, broken one of those obvious rules.
And that brings us to a massive misconception, the illusion of user error.
Interesting.
Historically, there is just a really strong tendency for defense attorneys representing these large entities to immediately blame the victim.
Of course.
It's a convenient narrative. They just argue, well, they shouldn't have been on the tracks.
Let me play devil's advocate here, though. I'm looking at these accident scenarios. And if a driver actively goes around a lowered gate with flashing red lights, how can an attorney possibly prove the municipality or the railroad is at fault? Doesn't personal responsibility have to trump infrastructure at some point?
It absolutely does. I mean, in a scenario where someone intentionally bypasses a fully functioning, clearly visible warning system, liability falls heavily on them.
Right.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, what we are really talking about are the scenarios where the infrastructure creates a trap, where the victim fully believed they were following the rules, but the environment itself failed them.
Give me an example of how that actually happens.
Sure. Consider the physical grade of the crossing itself. The federal government has really strict geometric standards for how a road must be paved as it approaches a railroad track.
Okay.
If a municipality repaves a road over the years and accidentally creates a humped crossing.
Oh, like a steep incline.
Yeah, exactly. A low clearance vehicle or like a massive commercial truck can literally bottom out and get physically stuck on the tracks.
Oh, wow.
The driver didn't try to beat the train. The road design physically trapped them.
Wow. So they're just sitting ducks.
Exactly. Or consider line of sight degradation. Maybe a town fails to trim overgrown vegetation on a blind curve, which completely obscures the warning signs.
So you don't even know a train is coming.
Right. By the time a driver realizes there is a crossing, they are already on top of the rails. Or, you know, consider degraded retro-reflective signage that is basically invisible at night. These are systemic failures.
Which means multiple parties could share the blame.
Yeah.
You could have the railroad responsible for the tracks, the county responsible for the road paving, and maybe a private contractor responsible for the warning lights.
Yes. And the moment an impact occurs, all of those entities activate their risk management teams.
Instantly.
Instantly. They dispatch investigators to the scene while the victim is literally still in the emergency room. They pull the train's event data recorder, you know, the black box,
okay.
And they lock down the crossing's signal data logs. They are actively building a defense to assign comparative negligence to the victim before the victim's family even knows what happened.
So what does this all mean? Because that is terrifying. If you are sitting in a hospital bed with catastrophic injuries, how are you supposed to fight an entity that already has a 10-hour head start and literally an army of corporate engineers on retainer?
You can't. Not alone, anyway.
Right.
Proving municipal or corporate liability requires highly specialized accident reconstructionists, biomechanical engineers, metallurgists.
The whole science.
It is. It demands an aggressive preservation of evidence before skid marks are washed away or data is overwritten. And that requires a very specific caliber of legal representation.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because when you look at who actually takes on these billion-dollar entities in New York, you keep seeing the law offices of Norman Gershon.
Oh, absolutely.
Looking at their operation in Westchester County in New York City is basically a masterclass and how you level a severely unbalanced playing field.
It really is. To litigate against a transportation corporation, a firm needs immense financial endurance and specialized technical knowledge. You're dealing with decades of case law surrounding motor vehicle accidents, trucking collisions, and, you know, complex pedestrian strikes.
And what really caught my attention when researching his firm is this specific reputation. Norman Gershon is widely known as the attorneys other lawyers called to try their toughest cases.
Yes, the special ops closer.
Right. I wanted to dissect that for a second, because the legal field is intensely competitive. For a lawyer to look at their own case file, realize the opposition is too fierce, or the engineering analysis is just too complex, and actually hand that case over to Norman to take it to trial, that is a massive indicator of capability.
It speaks to the economics and the reality of the legal industry. I mean, many law firms operate on volume.
Churning and burning.
Exactly. They want to process cases quickly and settle them out of court. But when a corporation refuses to offer a fair settlement, when they dig their heels in, you need a trial lawyer.
Right.
You need a firm that is fully prepared to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on expert witnesses and literally drag that corporation in front of a jury. The defense teams know exactly which lawyers are afraid of a courtroom.
And they price their settlement offers accordingly.
Precisely.
But they also know who will absolutely dismantle them on the stand. I'm looking at the trial records here, and the verdicts are staggering.
Yeah.
We aren't talking about small, incremental victories. The firm has secured verdicts and settlements exceeding $16 million, $14.5 million, $7.5 million, $5 million.
Those numbers are incredibly revealing. You do not secure a $16 million recovery without completely outmaneuvering a well-funded defense team. It requires proving every single layer of that Swiss cheese model we talked about. It requires taking the train's black box data and proving that the conductor was distracted for exactly 1.5 seconds, or proving that the municipality knew about the faulty grade crossing for 3 years and did absolutely nothing.
You know, what's interesting is how the clients describe the experience of being represented at that level.
Hmm.
One client described him as a beast in the courtroom,
right,
but immediately followed it by saying he is one of the most stand-up, honest, and trustworthy men I've ever met.
That's a great combination.
That duality seems crucial. You need someone ruthless when cross-examining a corporate engineer, but entirely transparent when advising a grieving family.
That combination is really rare. And another client noted that the firm secured a much larger settlement than they initially expected.
Wow.
That tells you the firm isn't just taking the first offer to close the file. They are pushing the case to its absolute maximum value.
Right.
But then this raises an important question. None of that legal firepower matters if the victim inadvertently torpedoes their own case at the scene of the accident.
Ah, yes. The self-inflicted wounds. You can hire the best attorney in New York, but if you've already handed the insurance company a silver bullet, you are fighting an uphill battle.
Exactly.
Let's walk through the exact playbook victims need to follow in the immediate aftermath of a severe transportation accident.
Okay, so the first rule is always immediate medical attention. Aside from the obvious health reasons, the legal mechanics of this are vital. Insurance companies use sophisticated software programs, algorithms like Colossus, to calculate payout minimums.
Right.
These algorithms actively look for gaps in treatment. If you wait 3 days to see a doctor because you thought the pain would go away, the software flags it and immediately devalues your claim, arguing the injury wasn't that severe.
So getting in the ambulance creates an undeniable time-stamped paper trail from minute one.
Exactly. The second step is preserving evidence. This goes back to the concept of spoliation, which is when evidence is lost or destroyed.
Right.
If you are physically able, take photos of everything. The road conditions, the crossing gates, the tire marks, the weather conditions. Third, get witness information yourself. Do not rely entirely on the police report.
Right, because people wander off. If a pedestrian saw the crossing gate malfunction or saw that the warning lights didn't activate until the train was already in the intersection, you need their phone number right then and there.
Yes. Fourth, and this is where so many people make a critical error, avoid discussing fault.
Oh, this is huge.
Do not apologize to the conductor or the other driver. Do not say, I just didn't see the train. And most importantly, do not give a recorded statement to the opposing insurance company.
Those insurance adjusters are incredibly strategic. I mean, they call you when you are still hopped up on painkillers in the hospital ward.
Yep.
They act friendly. They act empathetic. And they tell you they just want to, you know, get a quick statement so they can process your claim and get you paid.
But their actual goal is to lock you into a statement that implies comparative negligence.
Exactly.
Which is why the final step in the playbook is securing representation immediately. When you hire an experienced personal injury firm early, they instantly throw up a wall between you and the insurance companies.
Right.
They send preservation letters to the transportation authorities demanding they lock down all data and video footage.
Now, I have to jump in here with a reality check.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm listening to this, and I've just been severely injured, I'm out of work, and the hospital bills are stacking up into the hundreds of thousands.
Right.
The absolute last thing I want to think about is paying a massive retainer for a high-powered trial attorney. How does an average working-class family afford the kind of engineering experts and accident reconstructionists required to fight a $16 million battle?
That is the most common fear, and it is entirely understandable. But the mechanics of personal injury law in these high-stakes cases are designed to remove that barrier. Top-tier firms operate on a contingency fee basis.
Okay.
There are absolutely no attorney fees unless they recover compensation for you. You only pay if you win.
That is a massive structural advantage.
It democratizes the justice system. The law firm takes on all the financial risk. They front the money for the biomechanical engineers. They pay for the accident reconstruction. They finance the entire investigation.
Wow.
And if they lose, the victim owes them nothing for those services. It allows a family with zero disposable income to go toe-to-toe with a multi-billion-dollar railroad corporation and actually have a fair fight.
But taking on these entities isn't just about financial resources. It's also about jurisdiction. The rules for suing a municipal entity like the MTA or the Long Island Railroad are entirely different than suing a private commercial trucking company.
Very different.
And this is where geography becomes a tactical weapon.
Jurisdiction is everything in New York. The procedural hurdles, the statutes of limitations, and the specific notice of claim requirements, they vary wildly depending on who you are suing and where the accident happened.
Which is why the footprint of your legal team matters. Looking at Norman Gershon's practice, they cover a massive and diverse area.
They do.
I mean, they're litigating in White Plains, Yonkers, New Rochelle, Mount Vernon, Scarsdale, Harrison, Bronxville, essentially all of Westchester County.
Right.
But they also cover the five boroughs. Manhattan, the Bronx, Queens, and Brooklyn. Knowing the local courts, understanding the specific municipal infrastructure of Yonkers versus the infrastructure of Brooklyn, and knowing the local judges provides a distinct home field advantage.
You need a team that knows the exact layout of the board they're playing on, because the defense teams certainly do.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, today? The ultimate takeaway from the tragedy at Merritts Road and from understanding how these massive cases are fought and won is that navigating a catastrophic accident is never a DIY project. The physics involved are too destructive. The systemic failures are too deeply buried in algorithms and infrastructure, and the corporate defense teams mobilize far too quickly.
The moment the dust settles, the fight has already begun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have someone on your side who understands how to pull the black box data, how to analyze a grade crossing predictor, and how to hold municipalities accountable, you are at the mercy of entities whose sole job is to minimize your loss.
Exactly. You need the heavyweight. You need the lawyer other lawyers call. If you or a loved one ever find yourselves in the aftermath of a catastrophic motor vehicle, trucking, or railroad crossing accident anywhere in the New York metropolitan area or Westchester County, there is one critical number you should have saved.
Yeah, write this down.
Is the law offices of Norman Gershon at 914-485-1444. Again, that is 914-485-1444. You hope you never have to use it, but if that autopilot commute ever shatters, you do not want to be scrolling through Google trying to figure out who is actually capable of fighting a corporation.
It is about leveling the playing field when the stakes are quite literally life and death. And as we dissect how incredibly complex these infrastructure cases are today, it leaves me with a rather provocative thought about where we are heading tomorrow.
Oh, I like this. Where is the technology taking us?
Well, think about the evolution of our transportation grids. We are moving rapidly toward automation.
True.
We are looking at AI-driven traffic systems, autonomous commercial trucks, and, you know, silent high-speed rail expansions. When human error is gradually removed from the equation, when an algorithm is entirely responsible for dropping a crossing gate or applying a truck's emergency brakes, how will the legal definition of negligence evolve in New York over the next decade?
That is wild.
Right. Finding the exact failure in the Swiss cheese model won't just mean looking at a rusty wire. It might mean auditing millions of lines of proprietary code to prove that an AI prioritized traffic flow over pedestrian safety.
Oh, wow.
And in that future, holding massive tech-integrated corporations accountable is going to be exponentially more difficult.
If you think cross-examining a railroad engineer about a broken mechanical gate is tough, imagine putting an algorithm on trial.
Good luck!
Having a fearless trial attorney is going to become even more vital than it is today. That is definitely something to chew on. Well, that is all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us as we unpack the hidden mechanics of these systems. Please stay safe out there on those New York roads. Look beyond the obvious at those crossings, and we will see you back here for our next exploration.